Welcome to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Dave Esler, co-author of The Pursuit of Something Better, How an Underdog Company Defied the Odds, Won Customers' Hearts, and Grew its Employees into Better People, part one of two. On behalf of the entire Strategy Driven team, I would like to welcome you to this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast, an interview with Dave Esler, co-author of The Pursuit of Something Better, How an Underdog Company Defied the Odds, Won Customers' Hearts, and Grew its Employees into Better People, part one of two. The Strategy Driven Podcast focuses on the tools and techniques executives and managers can use to improve their organization's alignment and accountability to ultimately achieve superior results. These podcasts elaborate on the best practice and warning flag articles found on the Strategy Driven website at www.strategydriven.com. In this special edition podcast, Dave Esler shares with us his insights on how U.S. Cellular achieves superior results by becoming a dynamic organization, a transformational change that focused the organization on the customer and on valuing its frontline associates. And so now, without any further delays, let's get started. We are privileged to be joined by Dave Esler, co-author of The Pursuit of Something Better, How an Underdog Company Defied the Odds, Won Customers' Hearts, and Grew its Employees into Better People. Dave joined co-author Myra Kruger in 1987 to establish Esler Kruger Associates. He has a corporate background in communications and human resources from Metropolitan Life and Nortel Networks, and several years of consulting experience. Dave is the author of many articles on a variety of business topics. Dave, welcome to the Strategy Driven Podcast.
Great to be here, Nathan. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I am thrilled that you were able to join us this evening for an interview. I absolutely loved The Pursuit of Something Better. I think our audience is in for a real treat. I have read a lot of business books, and I cannot say that I have ever read a book that, besides just being riveting and compelling, this book is a case study that gets so deep into how one company transformed itself into truly something better that it's just hard to imagine not being able to learn a whole host of good ideas from your book. So I love the book. I know this evening, while I'm anticipating our podcast discussion will be a little long, we're not even going to be able to scratch the surface of just all the wonderful information in your book. So I'm really thrilled to have you on our show.
Well, that's awfully kind of you. I really appreciate that feedback from somebody who's actually read the book.
Yeah. Well, now, Dave, The Pursuit of Something Better is a book, as I mentioned, it's about a company, and it's very specifically about U.S. Cellular, and it focuses on the time frame between 2000 and 2008. So to just kind of establish a framework for our conversation this evening, would you provide some background into U.S. Cellular as a company, its industry, and its market, and what you saw as the performance gains that were made from 2000 to 2008 as compared with its many competitors?
Sure. I would imagine a lot of people haven't heard of U.S. Cellular. If you live in one of U.S. Cellular's markets, you know who they are. If you don't, and U.S. Cellular only operates in 23 states, you may not have heard of it. So some background's probably important. U.S. Cellular is a wireless company. It's a competitor with AT&T Wireless and Verizon Wireless and Sprint and the big guys, the national providers. It's mm-hmm. what's known as, I think technically in the trade, as a super regional. It provides wireless service to customers in mainly the Midwest, and it also has some markets in New England and in the Mid-Atlantic states, a few in the West. But if you imagine a swath down the middle of the country covering Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, and sort of straight down the middle of the country, that's where U.S. Cellular operates. U.S. Cellular has been in business since 1983. That was really when the wireless business, cellular telephones, got their start. That's a fairly recent field. The 15, 17 years from that point till 2000 was a kind of a wild and woolly period for that industry, just getting started. There were many players. A lot of them were independents, sort of underfunded organizations with a lot of ambition and great ideas, really an exciting time in the industry. There were 20 or 30 firms that competed in that industry. Very few of them had emerged nationally to dominate the industry as the majors do now. By 2000, the industry had started to consolidate, and the number of small independents was starting to dwindle. The market was maturing. A lot of people had cell phones by then. The wild growth of the 80s and 90s was starting to slow down. And the business analyst said, this is consolidation time, and we expect all these little firms that were operating by with a hope and a prayer to drop out, to merge, to sell, and most of them did. U.S. Cellular didn't. Mm-hmm. It's owned by the Carlson family in Chicago. They've been in the telecommunications business for a long time. They own TDS, a major wireline carrier in the Midwest. And that's what they do. And they said, no, we'd like to play for a while. We're not gonna sell. And so they were looking for a way to stay viable. They didn't really have, unfortunately, at that point, besides their presence, they didn't have anything particularly notable about them, nothing proprietary, nothing that would make them stand out except that they were there. They had a foothold in largely rural and small-town America. They knew how to make money. They'd always been profitable. But the way forward in this mm-hmm. consolidating, expanding industry that was going to be increasingly dominated by the big boys, it wasn't very clear. And they hired a guy named Jack Rooney, who had come out of Ameritech. Ameritech had been acquired, one of the Baby Bells, and as they consolidated by Southwestern Bell, which has gone on to reconstitute itself as AT&T.
Okay.
Jack didn't want to be in a big organization again, go back to in that route. He had started to experiment while he was at Ameritech with a different kind of culture. The origins of the something better began there, and U.S. Cellular seemed to be a good place for. They wanted to find their way in this emerging industry, and Jack had some ideas that he hadn't had a chance to fully explore, and the match was made, and that was in 2000, The book covers the period between 2000 and 2008. I'm happy to report that in 2010, U.S. Cellular is still here, still thriving, come through the recession extremely well, hasn't laid anybody off, stock's doing well, and Jack has done well. In that period, in that 10-year period, U.S. Cellular, I think the main achievement, if you're looking for some kind of a performance benchmark, it did survive. Mm-hmm. It's the only independent left. I think it was the eighth biggest cellular firm in the country back in 2000. Through attrition and its own growth, it's now number five. There are the four big national carriers, and U.S. Cellular is the next biggest. It's the biggest and pretty much the only one of the super regionals left, and has no intention, as far as I know, of going anywhere. It's more than doubled its number of customers, it's more than doubled the number of employees it has. It had 4,000 folks when we started in 2000. It's got about 9,000 now. 6.5 million customers compared to about 2.8, I think, back in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I think just about every measure of the numerical measure shows double or more growth. In my mind, the biggest achievement is just it has navigated a path through these companies that are four, Verizon and AT&T are 10 times as big as U.S. Cellular or more, and to have carved a niche in the industry under those circumstances, I think is just remarkable.
That is remarkable. And Dave, you mentioned Jack Rooney, and so I'd like to start by just asking you a little bit about Jack. He, of course, is U.S. Cellular CEO from 2000 to the present, and he really transformed U.S. Cellular and led his team to achieve the outstanding results that they have. Would you describe Jack as a leader and the focus of his leadership style?
Like most leaders that do unusual things, Jack's an extraordinary guy. He really is. He cut his teeth as a finance guy. I think his first job, if I recall, out of business school was with the Federal Reserve as an analyst. And then he went on to be a chief financial officer at several major corporations. So the number side of the business, the analytical side, you can't pull any wool over the guy's eyes. So it's not a case of him being a non-numerical oriented leader.
Okay.
What is unusual about him is that he's really defined as a leader more by his passion, his emotions, his heart. And he's always worn his heart on his sleeve as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's always used the term passion as a descriptor that describes the quality that he's looking for, that he represents. You always know where Jack's coming from. There's nothing hidden about him. He tells you exactly what he's thinking, sometimes very colorfully, sometimes with far more emphasis than you wanted to hear. He loses his temper. He cries. He smashes the table if he's not a milquetoast. So he brings an element of passion, of the inspirational side of leadership, and that's what awakens the loyalty and the energy in his organizations.
Okay. Yeah, he sounds like a very real person.
He is. Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I'm going to correct you on something that you didn't know about at the time we started talking about this interview.
Yeah.
The book hints that Jack's close to retirement, going to retire. Well, he's announced his retirement. He will be retiring at some point in 2010. So he's announced that to the organization. They know he's going to be leaving, and that all the issues of succession are going to be on the table. And so Jack is he's made his decision, and he's going to be leaving the organization. But he has had an extraordinary run in what he's achieved in that company.
Well, certainly. And the foundation of that achievement has been Jack's shaping of the company's culture into what he calls the dynamic organization. Could you share with us what the dynamic organization is and maybe some components of Jack's model?
Sure. I think the fundamental thing about Jack's approach to culture and to running an organization is that it needs to be values-based and values-driven. And that's a pretty common term, but he really means it. The dynamic organization is not the first label he gave to the sort of combination of ideas that go into the notion of culture. At first, he called it the virtual organization. This was back in the 90s when he was forming his ideas. And I think that captures what he has in mind better than the dynamic organization does. The virtual organization was his idea that if the culture was strong enough, if the organization's values were well enough understood, that every individual in it would know automatically what needs to be done in a given situation, how to act, how to behave in a with customers, what to do when a problem arose, how to run the business at the grassroots level without being told every step of the way by a controlling manager or a chain of command. And so that his idea of a culture, of a successful culture for a retail business, would be one where the values are well enough understood by everybody in the organization, where the behaviors that result from those values are so ingrained that to be almost automatic, a CEO like him, or a line of vice presidents, or regional managers, or sales managers, they don't need to be telling you every day what you need to do. You know it. You understand it. You do it automatically. And the virtual part of it is that I think back in the 90s, the notion was that the corporation would just kind of fall away, and you'd have a virtual organization, which was really employees who were so well understood the mission and the direction that they would just go ahead and do it. Unfortunately, virtual as a corporate concept was kind of hijacked by the idea of offshoring our manufacturing plants, and you just have a corporate shell in the United States, and you actually do the work overseas in low-wage countries, and we started to call those virtual companies, virtual corporations, and that was anathema to Jack. So he said, "I got to get a new name," and he settled on the dynamic organization as a label but the concepts of something that is so ingrained in every associate, every employee, he calls his employees associates. Means that their behaviors in any given situation are automatic, and they're the right ones for the company and for the customer.
Now, Dave, in the pursuit of something better, you present several tools used to implement the dynamic organization concept. Would you describe a couple of those tools and how they're used?
The tools Jack uses and applied to culture change. You know, U.S. Cellular, when he started in 2000, they were not a bad company. They were a regular company, an ordinary company. There were good folks in the company, and there were people out for their own interests, and pretty much like any organization. His thought was that we need to define the half dozen values that are going to drive this place. We need to understand the 10 or 12 behaviors that emerge from those values in everyday situations. And the trick, of course, is to have a whole organization in 25 states spread out across the country, 4,000 growing to 9,000 people, all doing the same thing without the inconsistency that normally kills those kinds of initiatives, where the walk doesn't match the talk. So how are you going to do that? How are you going to drive this down to an organization that's spread out as this one? Communication is everybody's got a corporate communications group. Everybody communicates to their associates. That was a key tool. You have to know what the mission is. You have to know what those values are. You have to understand what it is we're trying to accomplish, what the culture looks like. And Jack grabbed a hold of the communication reins right from the start. It had been the typical mix of all kinds of newsletters and bits and pieces of information, the baby news and the bowling scores and all the social information, a grab bag of other stuff that may or may not be relevant to the company's success. And he, for several years, in fact, to this day, nothing got communicated that wasn't about the culture.
Okay.
All the little publications, the miscellaneous media got shut down. One or two cross-company organs were sponsored and established. One of them was a newsletter. It's called Dynamically Speaking, and it was probably the best-read newsletter, corporate newsletter I've ever come across. And that was because all it did was talk about what this new dynamic organization thing is, what it looks like, how to make it work, how to be successful in it.
Okay.
It contained information that people needed to do well in this changing organization. It needed it had the formula for success if you wanted to keep your job and be a part of what was happening. Jack had a number of other communication vehicles. One of them was, again, none of these are unique. I know of lots of organizations that have similar sounding things, but the way he used them was extremely effective. One of them was an email box that any associate in the company could write to him directly about anything that was on their minds, a complaint, compliment, question. Called it Listen Jack. And it conveyed the message very symbolically and very suddenly that you can reach out and have a conversation with a top guy in an organization where top people not been very accessible, not been very available, as typical of most companies. And
sure.
You can just reach out and you'll get a response very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So communication was one tool. Training was another. Jack made it very clear, and he focused on his leaders to start with. He said, we're asking you to lead in a different way. Don't want you to be managers. Don't want you to be pushing paper and running the numbers and shutting your doors and sort of doing the things you've typically done. You're leaders. You need to inspire your people. You need to get in front of them. You need to lead from the front. You need to care. You need to a whole bunch of things that was just it was brand new stuff. It was a whole new agenda, and I think an awful lot of leaders were scared stiff to begin with. This was something. This is not what they signed up for. First of all, secondly,
sure.
They'd never done it, and they'd never seen it done. And what was this madman asking of us? Jack said, from the beginning, if you've got a skill issue, we know we're asking you to do some different things than you've ever done. If there are skill issues, and they're going to be, that's our problem. That's our responsibility. We'll
mm-hmm.
teach you those. And he built up a world-class training organization for a company its size. Probably devotes more resources to training and learning than any organization I know. And so the idea is, if you need to learn these things, haven't had the chance to be exposed to a different way of doing things, we'll teach you. If it's
mm-hmm.
a will issue, if you don't want to play, that's your problem. So the will-skill dichotomy was very central. And the skill part led to a ton of training programs. A new leader at U.S. Cellular, the first year, there are... I can't remember how many programs, but there's a network of six or eight programs that are designed to bring people, orient them to the expectations of maybe something different than they were used to if they came from another organization, and equip them with the skills that they're going to need to be able to be successful in that environment.
Absolutely.
I think the third tool that was really important...
Yeah.
Was everybody does performance management, performance appraisal. There's nothing new about that.
Mm-hmm.
Jack made it an extremely relevant part of how he runs the business, especially he focused mostly on leader performance appraisal. He had a process which he ran. Every leader of a certain level up gets reviewed specifically twice a year on two dimensions. How are they doing on doing their job, making their numbers,
okay. Mm-hmm.
the regular stuff that anybody in any organization has to do. You have to handle the what of your job, make your
sure.
objectives. And the second dimension is the how dimension. Okay, you're making your numbers. How are you doing? Are you doing it the right way? Are you doing it through the values?
Mm-hmm.
Are you demonstrating respect? Are you doing it ethically? Are you if you're making the numbers but you're doing it the wrong way by cutting corners or leaving bodies in your wake or in some way that's counter to the culture, that doesn't count. That's not success. So by tracking performance through these two dimensions and then having ways to deal with folks who are missing the mark on either one of them, if you're missing on the what side, you're on a performance plan. If you're missing on the how side, you're also on a performance plan. And both of those kinds of performance plans have expectations that next time around you're going to be on a path different from the one that got you in trouble in the first place. So a very strong look at performance management.
Now, Dave, very central to everything we've talked of are the clearly defined corporate values.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how U.S. Cellular's corporate values were defined, if it was something that Jack Rooney developed or he used, you know, his executive team, or were there employee focus groups? I've seen those used before, mm-hmm. or some other method.
Jack brought those with him. Jack had been observing what was working, what wasn't working in the various corporations that he'd worked in going into the mid-90s. He had never had a chance. He came late in life to having sort of an operational position, an executive position. He'd always been a finance guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had by the time he got his first chance at an executive position, he had pretty much decided how he was going to run an organization, and the values were going to be a big part of it. And he had in mind what the values would be. He and Myra, my partner, Myra Kruger, the co-author of the book, they got together. They met back in, I think it was 1994, and Jack said, I have these ideas. He'd just become the head of an Ameritech business unit, Ameritech Cellular,
mm-hmm.
and he said, I want to articulate them the right way. I want to put them down, make sure that they're clear, make sure they make sense. And he and Myra spent a couple of days just brainstorming Jack's ideas, but wanting to put them in a way that was understandable, that people would know what he was talking about, and so they did that. And the core values of the dynamic organization really haven't changed since then. They came out of Jack's head based on his observations and experience of what he thought should be driving a retail business, and he went from there. And they, just to enumerate what they are, there's the first one, I think the one that's always the dominant one in his mind is customer focus. The customer is at the heart of everything. If the customer is not driving your business, if it's not thinking about what the customer's needs are and how the customer will respond, if that's not central to your thinking, if that's not what's driving your behaviors, then you're really on the wrong road. As far as retail is concerned, at least.
Right.
was the second one. And back in those days, the concern was more about associates being respected by their leaders. I think it's evolved just to a sort of a broad mandate that respect for customers, for leaders, for associates, for suppliers, for contractors, everybody you touch, that has to be the watchword.
Okay.
Empowerment, going back to his notion of the virtual organization where people would not need leaders to tell them what to do, it's sort of inherent in that whole idea of the empowered associate. Ethics, absolutely, and defined in the broadest way of doing the right thing. You do the right thing in every circumstance. Everybody knows what the right thing is, more or less, with some, at least that's Jack's premise, and let's not quibble about detail or legalistic definitions. We do the right thing. We by our customers, by each other. Pride was the fifth one, and I don't know if it's a value as much as it's just something that Jack felt that you needed to feel good about your organization and what you're doing and your job for you to be able to convey the kinds of things you wanted to do to customers. So pride is critical. The only change in that list of the five values to begin with came in early 2000s. I think it's 2002 or 3.
Okay.
And U.S. Cellular added diversity as a sixth value, just because it seemed to Jack and to his officers that it really, I think a lot of people thought, you know, isn't that implied by the respect value? If we're really respectful, isn't it implied? And Jack felt that we really needed to articulate very specifically the value of diversity in the broadest possible sense. So those are the six values now.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this special edition of the Strategy Driven Podcast. I would like to personally thank Dave Essler for being with us today and sharing his insights on achieving superior results by focusing on the customer and valuing frontline associates. As always, we would appreciate receiving your feedback by email at podcast@strategydriven.com. If you enjoyed the show, please consider voting for us on Podcast Alley and visiting our website at www.strategydriven.com. You can find more information about Dave Essler and the pursuit of something better at www.esslerkruger.com. Until next time, so long.